I love this secret shopping concept because this is actually how I started. Most of my business, I go find someone else who's doing something similar and go like secret shopping.
You went through the funnel.
A lot of people try to start businesses and they're like, I don't know, I'm going to figure it out. Yeah, I'm going to reinvent the wheel. I'm going to figure it out on my own. No,
someone go find else is someone already similar. Doing it.
Take your ego down to be like, no one's doing what I'm doing. Like, no, they are. And actually, if it'd be a bad thing, like if no one was doing anything near what you were doing, that means there's probably not a market for it at all.
You know, they say women shouldn't be bossy.
We're out here reclaiming that word. What's so wrong with being the boss? I'm Tara Reed, the CEO of a multi-million dollar edtech business.
And I'm Katie Gaddy-Tossan, better known as Money with Katie on the internet.
At our core, we're driven by a shared ambition to build our own mini empires.
Welcome to Bossy. Okay, I can't with the hair. I can't focus.
I don't know
where to look.
They're called Bantu knots. My inspo for my look today was like cyberpunk, cyborg, like when humans turn off halfway into humans into machines plus like a little like tech in it. I'm having fun.
You crack me up because I'm like, okay, what could I wear that is going to be the most comfortable on my
I'm like,
bottom?
What is the storyline and the narrative around my outfit today? What are we going to do?
Classic. Yeah. I so love good. It. Well, if you're an audio listener, then you got to be on YouTube because that's
to
the
see
part
this
is.
Outfit.
That's
to
where
see the hair.
There is so much happening on Tara's side of this set, always.
Always.
The narrative.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about really like what you're optimizing for in business. Because sometimes we talk about optimizing for just like going big.
Growth.
Making growth all the time at all costs.
That's the assumption.
That's the assumption. But that is not always what you want, what you need, like any of that. And there are lots of scenarios where people are building like great products, big experiences, big customer experiences with small teams.
Yes. And that is my... That's kind of, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say that in a lot of ways, that's still what I'm trying to optimize for. Big number, small team.
Yeah.
I think the most sustainable thing for me would be that. Like, I don't want the management headache. I want something that I can run for a really long time.
What's small team to you? Like, what?
Sub five people.
Sub five?
Tiny. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
okay.
I did some secret shopping for this episode. I
have
my notes
here. Big number, small teams?
Yes.
Ooh,
there are two that I really want to tell you about because
to see how they do it.
I personally think there is something so impressive about people that have like just themselves, straight up solopreneur, or someone that is them and maybe one or two other people or maybe some part-time help, but like,
I always feel so skeptical of this. Like, can you really do that big numbers with like sustainably with just like a small team? So I'm interested to hear.
Sustainably might be the key, actually, because I think that a lot of these people, well, one of them has been around for longer. So I say it's like somewhat sustainable.
We start with one.
So the first one that I want to tell you about is this gal named Kat Norton. So she's known as Miss Excel.
Oh, online. I didn't know that. I should literally just know her as Miss Excel. I don't even know her name. Kat Norton. Okay, got it.
Okay, so Kat.
What does she do?
She sells courses.
Yeah.
She's like, it is educational about Excel.
Yep.
And
like Excel for work.
It's just Excel skills. So it's a very in-demand skill set, I would say.
I love Excel.
But I found her because I realized that I was seeing her everywhere and I was like, she's got to be doing pretty well. But I was also kind of curious of like, what's going on behind the scenes there? Like these courses, okay, the price point, they do vary, but one course is $297.
Okay. Small. Does she have a bunch of different courses?
She has several, I think maybe four or five that are each at that price point. And then she'll do a bundle for like $9.97.
Okay, wait, back up. Do you have any sense how big her business is?
I think they do like $2 million a year.
Okay, $2 million a year of four products. And the cheapest one is like $300.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But what's impressive to me is the consistency and the repetition. So, and I want to get into this in a little bit, but I sell more on like a launch model of like where I'll relaunch a product. But then like my always on game is a little bit soft. And so I want to talk to you about that later. But what I found so intriguing about her, and I kind of got these deets, you know, through listening to her talk on podcasts, but also because I have have some friends that are really good friends with her.
Okay.
And they'll be like, yeah, she does a webinar. I don't know if it's every week or every month. I think it might just be once per month.
Yeah.
Where she's consistently bringing new people into the fold via Instagram. She's just on Instagram. It's a very functional channel.
Yep.
So she's
people click the link in the bio.
They sign up for the webinar once a month. Okay. And then each launch from the webinar is consistently doing like, I think 80 to 100,000.
Yeah.
And it's like she has this, you know, formula. So I was kind of interested in, okay, I want to secret shop this and see if I were trying to.
Secret shop meaning like you signed, like you went to her Instagram, like you followed the funnel.
Yeah. This I tried is so to good.
I love this secret shopping concept because this is actually how I started. Most of my businesses, I go find someone else who's doing something similar and go like secret shop.
You went through the funnel. Is there any that you can think of that you actually looked at when you were?
There are a couple of people. I think Brian Harris.
I've never heard of him.
Is an online coach and he has like, he does a lot of blogging, or at least at the time he did a lot of blogging about like exactly what he does. And so he had this post. It was like how I made whatever $100,000 with my launch. And it was like this long, long blog post of like exactly what he did, the exact calendar, the exact launch thing. And I also went through his funnel. So I'm curious to hear kind of like as you went and did this research. But I do think that's what it takes to like, a lot of people try to start businesses and they're like, I don't know, I'm going to figure it out. Yeah, I'm going to reinvent the wheel. I'm going to figure it out on my own. No.
Someone else is already similar.
Take your ego down to be like, no one's doing what I'm doing. Like, no, they are. And actually, if it'd be a bad thing, like if no one was doing anything near what you were doing, that means there's probably not a market for it at all. Right. So like no one's anywhere near. So I'm excited to hear like what folks are doing and like how they structure
that. Well, here was the weird part is that I went to her website because I was like, let me sign up for the webinar. Like, I'm going to go to the freaking webinar and then see what she sends me as a follow-up and like what they're pitching me and what the discount is. I actually couldn't find the webinar on her website.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if this is something where it's like if there is an urgency component where it's only like live to join for a couple days beforehand or something. She might not have been in the marketing cycle of like, I just figured, oh, if it's a webinar that's once a month and that is how she's bringing in new customers.
You think she's running advertising? We actually probably could go to her Facebook page. You know, if you go on people's Facebook brand pages, you can see on like, there's a button to click. I forget what the button says, but it says, essentially says like show all ads that this brand is
running. You're kidding.
And you can click it to see like Facebook legally has to do. You can see all of their ads that they run, all the copy.
Oh, I'm sure they're running.
It's what
paid.
They're currently running though. So like sometimes it's deceiving. You can't go back in time. And so it doesn't mean that like sometimes you want to look at it to see what's working for people. Like,
Oh,
but
that's
just because someone's running an ad doesn't mean that one's the one that worked, right?
Yeah.
You start ads, you run them, and then you like turn off the ones that aren't working.
There'd almost have to be a longitudinal thing where you're checking in like once a week to see like, okay, they've been running this one for 6 months. This one's clearly working.
Yeah, but like when I started Absolute Code, like me and my friend Danielle, like we would regularly be like looking at other people's funnels. How did they structure them? Like there was a lot of study there. So I get that. I also understand, I'm not even sure, like I also run webinars. I'm trying to think if the webinar is directly on the website. I think it is, but it's not front and
center. How else do you get people into it?
There's a landing page, but it's not the main website. So if you are, for example, the link, I think we maybe should, did you look at her Instagram?
At her Instagram?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What's the link? So the link in the bio went to the website.
It was like a one of those pop-ups where there's like several CTAs.
Oh,
and it wasn't like, join the free class was not one of them.
Was not one of
which
them.
Which is what leads me to believe that maybe just at the specific time that I was trying to secret shop her,
I would imagine she probably has like a landing page, which is like a one page.
And
website.
The ads would probably direct to that.
Ads direct to that, whatever. But
and
anyway, focused on signing up. So did you find it eventually or no?
I think since then, because I do follow her and like, you know, kind of keep up with her, I think I've seen her promote them since then. So I'm like, all right,
it was just kind of the timing.
Yeah. But I did sign up for her newsletter.
Yeah.
Which is called The Workbook.
That's cute.
And I know, I thought that was cute too.
Excel workbook.
So I wanted to get on the email list to see. I was like, I needed to give her my email address somehow because I want to see if there's some system in the back end that's like, you know, capturing my email and then doing something with it. And this is what I thought was so interesting about what she did. The first email came the following day. So I did get a confirmation email that was like, you're
subscribed. Yeah.
The very next day, she pitched me the course. right away.
Straight to the sale.
Straight
was
to
it the
low
sale. Ticket or the higher price point? Because you said she has a range of prices, right?
$297.
She gave you the low ticket. So Charming that makes person. Sense.
So subject line said something about, this was what was also interesting. The subject line was like, the truth about entrepreneurship. And I'm like,
good subject line.
Weird that she's like leaning into that element of her brand.
Oh, entrepreneurship?
Yeah.
Because it's
It
Excel.
Wasn't the truth about Excel. It was like, and that got me to click. I was like, oh, what
it
the heck?
It worked.
I opened it, and at the bottom of the email was the section about her like entrepreneurial journey. But the top, it was a sales pitch. It's tried to sell me the course. This is what it is. And I just thought that was interesting because I think in my mind, and in what we do, I had this idea of like, you have to deliver, free value. You have to like really warm someone up first. And she just hit me with it. And I was like, well, I'm going to assume that that's working for her.
What's the range? See, here's the thing.
Is that
when
bad
I look
assumption?
At people's funnels, I don't straight up assume that it's working for them.
Why?
I think just from knowing from like everybody's A/B testing their own stuff and trying to see what works, particularly
that's
at that like $2 million level where it's not so much about like trying to figure out, does this work? It's like, how do I optimize this? Because just a little bit increase in the conversion rate makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And so I think like I have friends too that like look at people like, here, look at what they're doing and like assume that it's working. I think we could probably even like expand this even bigger to like, in general, when you see someone like posting all these things on social media and like all those things, you could go like, oh, their life is perfect. Or you go like, it's probably not. I always go when I look at what people are doing, I just take it with like a grain of salt that like, obviously some of the things are of course working, but I don't think you can take everything. But this worked. It got you to open. So you were an open rate number.
And so the other thing about her that I thought was interesting.
What do you think the email open rate is for that email?
Fuck, I don't know.
You had to guess. It's even a newsletter, you know, thing. High, low.
30%.
30%.
I would guess.
Yeah.
About 30%.
Okay.
Well,
30% is good. It's the first one.
I wish we could ask her. Let's call her up. Like,
yeah.
What would happen if you just
we can ask her up?
Okay. So the other thing that was interesting is I got into in the process of me trying to figure out how is she doing this.
Yeah.
Because it's her and her boyfriend actually does a lot of stuff for her, like works for her.
Oh.
They have no other employees. It's just the two of them.
Do they have any contractors? How
I
would
don't
you know?
Think so, because I listened to so many interviews with her. So
oh,
unless
she
she's straight,
about it.
Unless she's lying, I don't
no,
think
no, no,
she
no,
is.
No, 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 no.
Yeah.
She talked about it. She said it.
She talked about it. Her work schedule actually became the more interesting thing to me about her, and was like, I just was sitting there like, damn, I'm doing this so wrong. Like, my life is so wrong. She was telling in these interviews that she's very into energy management and like the energetics of business.
And it
skewed very woo-woo. You would have loved it.
I'm here for the woo-woo.
Yeah, you would have loved it. So she's talking about how she works 2 to 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
And what she does is every morning she's the same routine where she like works out. She meditates for like 30 minutes, which to me, I'm like, oh my God, 30 minutes. That's a long meditation. They'll like swim and like get in water and do things like that.
In water, great
She'll
idea.
She'll start working at noon and go to like 3.
Yeah.
And that is like the power
That's
hour.
The day.
She also said that when she's making these courses, she was like, it occurred to me that this could take however much time I allow it to take. So she was like, or I could recognize that this is going to be 40 to 50 to 60 hours of work total to do and do it in 1 week and just get it
sprint production.
And then rather than like, I'm just going to like, so I think it sounds like she's doing these very compacted, condensed sprint weeks that are just like crazy
I'm
and not sustainable. And then has like months of time where it's just like light promotion, the webinar once a month.
Yep.
Everything is automated
People
on the back end.
You're using the product and you're getting insights on what works, doesn't work.
Now,
and then you go in for another kill.
What I'll say though, is I don't know. I mean, she's only been doing this for like a year or two.
Yeah.
So when we talk about sustainability, I'm not. I would love to check in 5 years from now and go, is that still, have you tapped that market?
Yeah.
At some point, are you going to run out of people to sell this to?
Yeah. And also, I think at a certain size of business, I think she's like actually at a good spot. I think like once you get to starting to get into like 3 to 5, the things that you need to get from like that first stage, like the things you need as a CEO are totally different. Things you need as a leader are totally different.
Wait, say more about that.
Okay, so like that first phase, and I actually learned a lot of this from my executive coach, Eamon, like that first phase is really about like product And so, like, it sounds like she's very, as a founder, like, in the
creation of the product. She's making all of it herself.
Right, yeah. And at that, like, up until that point, like, that's a perfect, that's what you should be doing.
Yeah, and you have to know what you're selling. Yeah,
you need to be selling all of that. You know who your customer is and, like, who that person is and, like, get to know.
And what is the revenue that you said you mentally, what do you associate
that with? Where it shifts.
Where does it shift? At what point are you like, nope,
I think it's hard to get past 3 to 5 for multiple years.
Okay.
Without you having to shift into doing other things and other, like, having other priorities and, like, things, what you need as a leader shifts.
But is that different though for you if it is only still her and one other person? Is it shifting because of management, or are there other things? No longer
that, right? Like, the sheer volume of customer support emails that come in could exceed what is physically possible to do, right? Like,
so there's a
point where just, like, it exceeds that. And also, like, the reality is, she was like, you grow as a person,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, like, maybe you don't, like, at a certain point, you're like, I'm spending all of my time answering
email, I'm not,
or, like, whatever
Excel.
The thing is.
I'm Mrs. PowerPoint now. You grow out of it,
like,
a little
bit. What you want to work on and spend time on. So I do think, like, that does happen in reality. But I do think this is, like, kind of the conversation we're having, though, about, like, does the aspiration have to be to go past that? Like, I think so much of our conversation.
You know how happy I would be with $3 to $5 million
a year?
Reliably. I'd be happy with a third of that reliably for a long time.
But I think it's really hard for people to do. Like, the pressure of, like, you saw social media and someone was doing something more. And then also, like, your perception of what's a lot changes.
Holy, okay. Can I tell you that when I first started, my, like, pie in the sky dream was to do 10,000 a month.
Right.
And then I was at, like, 25, and I was like, wow, do we get to 50? Like, it was, like, immediately, it's like, vroom.
Before you even hit the goal, you have the next one. It's like, it doesn't even, like, you, it's very rare, particularly for, like, women like us, people like us,
that
who are, like, high achievers. Like, it's rare that you even make it to the goal before you have the next
one. You've got the next one.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that is maybe something that gets at the heart of knowing what is enough.
Yeah.
And having some level of contentment, which gets back to the idea of optimizing. What are you optimizing for? Maybe this is the thing.
Yeah.
I think I always told people, I'm optimizing for lifestyle. I want work-life balance. I'm optimizing for whatever. And then every single decision I was making, I was like, no, you're optimizing for growth.
But
you're saying this,
decision.
But you're deciding this.
What's an example of a decision that was, like, misaligned?
Okay, so if I'm telling, I would say things like, yeah, I want work-life balance. I'm doing this. For example, I'm joining Morning Brew. I'm you know, selling and not doing this on my own.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to work for 60 hours a week.
Yeah.
Like, I want to have less responsibility. I think that sounds really nice. And then the second I got in, I was like, well, what can we do? Can we do this? Let's add this. Let's add this. It was like the second the time opened up, it was like I just filled it with more
stuff.
Filled
it with more to-dos.
Yes.
What
spaghetti
do you,
at the wall.
What do you think when you hear the word lifestyle business?
I think something that you can comfortably do in, like, 4 hours a day, or you're consistently doing, like, 4 days a week.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you want to take a month off, things can, like, kind of run themselves, or nothing falls.
A month off. That's a lot of time. Huh?
I know. But I think that's a life. Like, you have the level of flexibility to where you are physically doing less. And I think that a lot of these things, like, she, I think, has that 100%.
Yeah.
Because everything is so tweaked to be like, I know how I create the income. It comes. I know if I reliably do A, B, and C, then D will happen.
Yep.
And I think that's a much different model than, like, we are doing 7 different things because we're still in the phase of figuring out what works and where we want to focus
that's
our energy.
Interesting.
And so I think lifestyle business, I hear that, and I think growth is not the goal.
Do you think, like, overall general energy of the term lifestyle business, good or bad?
I think it has a derogatory framing. Like, I think when I hear I think of, like, whatever the opposite of ambition is. But I don't,
like,
think
not ambitious, not ambitious enough.
And I don't think it should be. I'm like, I think that there's, I don't think there's anything wrong. If anything, I'm trying to get myself to that point where I'm like, that's the goal. Like, wouldn't that be nice to have a life that's not fully, where it's not, this is not the only thing you think about all day long?
And yet, we don't have
that. And here we are.
It is all we think about.
Yeah.
The whole
anyway, back to business.
We'll show about it. Yeah.
Okay.
I think because I come from a background of tech where lifestyle business is a terrible word, it's really very pulling for me. Like, this is really like a whole mind thing I've had to work through of like, I started my first business. I was not thinking of building a lifestyle business. I was like, I kind of got sucked into the VC track kind of culture and conversation. Okay. And so when I built my second business, when I built Apps Without Code, my whole intention was I'm not doing that. I want to build a lifestyle
business. Going hard.
But no, I want to build a lifestyle business.
Oh, the first, oh, I got you.
I want to build a lifestyle business. But I think if I actually look to your point year to year at just like what was motivating me, there are some years where I'm like, no, we've got to grow and like figure out all the growth at all costs. And I very much see myself and acknowledge the gap in my space of myself of being pretty like schizophrenic about this back and forth about this. And for myself, like, are we building a growth thing? Are we building a lifestyle business thing? Do you feel like you're back and forth?
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
Well, because I think I see, I wrestle with it because I'm like, I believe in what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I believe that the more people that are brought into that fold, the better.
Yeah.
Like, I think that there's a really positive impact. And so there's a side of me that's like, why wouldn't, you're 28. Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you try to make it as big as possible? Why wouldn't you try to touch as many people's lives as you possibly can?
Yeah.
And really see how far you can take it. Why play smaller than you would need to?
Yeah.
But then there's a part of me that also recognizes that a lot of that, I think, is just ego. And is like,
ooh, it's so, it's all ego.
Yeah. And is ego necessarily a bad thing?
No, sometimes like you need to like leverage and harness and wield the ego to like do
is there a
thing.
Part of, yeah, I don't know. I think about that a lot. Like, is there something inherently, I saw something once that was like, the more healed I become, the less ambitious I become. And I'm like, I do wonder if ambition can ever be purely kind of intrinsically motivated and not about extrinsic reward in some capacity.
I'm like, definitely going through that right now.
So really?
I definitely feel that. I feel like the ambition just shifts. Like, the ambition is shifting from like material world 3D, like,
oh yeah,
financial, it's like ambition and more about self-actualization. So I'm still ambitious, but I do think it shifts. And I do think that like that for sure is like a thing that I've experienced.
Yeah, I think I'm starting to walk down that path.
Yeah.
I've been a little bit.
How do you feel about it?
I think
I've heard you say multiple times some equivalent of like, I would just like to like,
you know what it is?
Retire somewhere.
Yeah, I want to, like, I think, well, you know what's helpful to understand contextually is that I started Money with Katie specifically to document my journey to early retirement.
Ah.
So like that was the original goal. And I think in the process of being like, oh wait, I actually love, I don't want to not do this. Like this is, I think about it 24, this is a game. Like I love this. And I think at some point along the way, I kind of lost the fun of it. And I think it used to be a little more fun in trying to outsmart, outwit, what is the outlast, outplay. I'm like on a game of Survivor, you know? But I think it like, I think it's, it shifted at some point to where it became me originally feeling real, and then looking around, I'm like, you kind of alluded to, like, the goal keeps, the goalpost keeps moving. And I would meet people that had,
you just have friends,
10 million, 20 million. And I'm like, I ain't shit.
I was just going to say, like, your friend group gets richer, the things around you.
And yeah, and I started to be like, oh, my God, I'm nothing. I haven't done anything impressive. Oh, my God. And I started to put
insert
this pressure on myself to be bigger and better. And so I'm trying to interrogate that now and be like, why was this not enough? So, okay, so that was, that's a great, again, we should do an entire episode about that. But that was Miss Excel.
Yeah, no. And it's an interesting conversation that comes out of like how you take a big revenue product, lots of customers, but do it with a small team.
Yeah.
Anybody else you can think of that's doing
that? Yeah. I want to tell you about, do you know who Thomas Frank is?
No.
Okay, so I interviewed him for the Money with Katie show, actually.
Thomas
but
Frank.
I found him because there is, I think, in the course world, in the educational space, at least in personal finance, courses are kind of how people make a lot of money.
Yes.
But courses kind of had a moment during the pandemic, and
That's
I think we're on the other side of that now, and so I don't know the longevity. But I was always more drawn asynchronous courses, we'll say.
Yeah, there's also something really, like, I was thinking about doing big revenue numbers with small teams. There are some business models, to your point, where that works and doesn't work. Like if you want to produce manufactured tablets,
right?
Like
this is like an online business.
It's really hard to do. So this is online business centric. And what's unique about, I think, like both of these examples, the one you just gave with Miss Excel and the one Thomas Frank, okay, the one you're about to give, is like with an education business. In, at least in America, but I think across the board, there's like a high value perception of education. Education is expensive, is our culture.
Yeah.
Right.
Prestigious.
But it can be an online project. The product is a digital product. And so it doesn't take as much to produce. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of do it with a one person team. And I think it creates a particular nice storm for that model.
Yeah. Right. I also think there's a fair bit of like healthy skepticism too around courses, because it's not like that shit's regulated whatsoever. It's not like there's like an accreditation or like there are plenty of scammers.
Tons.
So I think that that's so. I have a love-hate relationship with that world.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, sometimes I think it's like you could have just written a book.
Yeah.
We have courses, by the way. Money with Katie does have courses.
Yeah. So
it's not that we don't do it, but we keep our price point low. And anyway, I prefer tools. I think something that someone can functionally continue to use is really cool, but it's hard to sell something that is like on a no-code platform like Google Sheets or like Notion.
Yeah.
That you can charge a lot of money for.
Mm.
And it's hard to justify that value unless there is truly...
In general, it's hard to sell online tools.
Tools
that
are hard.
A lot of money because people have a value perception that like tools are worth less.
Bingo.
So the other funnel that you were talking about was Thomas Frank.
So he sells a tool.
Okay.
So that's what I like about him is that...
What is his tool?
It is a Notion product.
Yeah.
I think it's called Ultimate Brain or Second. I can't remember. There's two different things in his kind of ecosystem, or like he's has like a partnership with this guy named Thiago Forte that is also in that like productivity space.
Oh, I think I know him. Yeah.
Thomas started as a YouTuber and he started making YouTube videos in 2014.
Yeah.
But he was making productivity content and how to be more effective, how to use your time more effectively. And he got really into Notion. So he was doing Notion kind of on the side, like just figuring it out for himself. And he's not a developer, but he like liked how customizable it was.
Yeah.
Now you can like really build it into whatever you want. So he made a sub channel for his YouTube channel called Thomas Frank Explains. So his main channel, Thomas Frank, then you have Thomas Frank Explains. Thomas Frank, the main channel, has like 3 million followers, or subscribers rather.
Oh, interesting. He already had an audience.
And then he launches Thomas Frank Explains
to
be like the go-to library of content about Notion. If you want to learn Notion, you want to master this software, you go to Thomas Frank Explains. So like anyone that's
Notion.
Searching.
I'm interested in this.
Yeah. Anyone that's searching, how do I make this a Notion? Like the SEO is very favorable for him because it's just kicking his YouTube videos. So he quickly amassed hundreds of thousands of subscribers that are hyper-focused on this one tool on Notion. And then he said that one Saturday, he was like dinking around with the productivity system that he had created in Notion. And he was like, I should sell this. Like, I think he started to try to make a course, and then he's like, why am I trying to teach people how to make their own? I'm just going to sell them mine. So he figured out how to turn it into a template.
Sell a template, and then you take the template and you can make edits to it into your own thing.
Yes.
Got it.
So he charges $129 for that.
Okay.
He ended up launching another product later. Again, same story, where it's something that he made for himself and his team, which I love that, because that to me immediately leapfrogs all of the skepticism that I have about you like throwing something.
It's like a thing I've been using that I know works.
You had a problem. You solved it. This is the product that came out of that. I have that same problem. I'm like, sold.
I want that tool too.
Sold.
Yeah.
So he made something like specifically for creators, which I think is great. Lean into what you know. So I tried to secret shop him, but I think what's so interesting about his is at that $129 price point and with a tool that it's like, he's not like relaunching it. There's no like webinar.
Always available.
It's like always on Masterclass.
Interesting.
So he has he uses the YouTube channel. He's posting new videos. I think he says now he's down to like once a month.
He only has one product.
The two.
It's the one. Okay, got it. Okay.
Yeah. But he posts these videos about Notion.
Yeah.
He teaches you how to do things in the video. And then he'll like, you know, here's how you do that within the Ultimate Brain template. Or here's how you do that within the creator, whatever. And then he just links to them in the description. And the amount of traffic flowing through that YouTube channel, that top of funnel is large enough such that they're making... Oh my God, how much did he say they did last year? Like, it was over $1 million a year.
over at, a million.
At 129.
Just put the link into the bio. Click it.
Consistently.
I feel like that 129 and below price point is a good price point for, like, you don't need to, like, do a bunch of prep or, like, a webinar, for example. You can send people straight to
yes,
the thing.
Yes, agreed. Yeah. You don't have to make a hard sales pitch.
So both of these scenarios are straight to sale.
Actually, has you know
a webinar,
what?
But
yeah, with his
email went straight.
Yes, no yeah. sales calls. But with his, okay, so here's this is reminding me now. Let me check my notes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I joined his email list. He drove to free Notion templates first.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was like a pared down, kind of watered down version. I got a freebie first. And then he uses that. Yeah, it's like a classic lead magnet. So he's like, has the free template. You get the free template. And then he makes the hard sell in, like, the follow-up email. So I went to his profile, too, to kind of, like, see, because he'll talk about this stuff. He wrote a thread about how in his sales email copy, this kind of harkens back to the Miss Excel thing, he used to wait a few emails. He would, like, send you a lot of emails first and then start
value
selling
add,
to you.
Value add, value add, then sell.
He said he started trying to sell an email one, and he saw conversion shoot right up. And
yeah.
his whole thing was, like, my theory about why this works is because when you have an interested party that has just given you their email, they're the warmest right then. They
yeah.
want to make that decision right then. So they're ready to take action. So if you can hit them right then with the value add, and it's like a good fit.
Yeah, it's a good timing to do it. So many entrepreneurs, though, I think, have imposter syndrome about,
yes.
like, I don't want to, like, give the person the sale right now. I don't want to put my pitch right now. I'm going to put it, like, really far down and, like, really, like, get... I need to give a bunch.
Nurture.
And I think, like, nurture. And I do think there's a bunch of value, and it doesn't, isn't that Gary Vaynerchuk's, like,
yeah.
book, Jab, 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 Right Hook, the idea that you, like.
That does sound like a Gary
like
Vaynerchuk.
You're, like, boxing, but that you, like, give value, give value, give value, then you sell is essentially
yes.
the premise, right? But also, there's an element of this, which is, like, ooh, I'm just, like, scared a little bit about giving the offer
yeah,
up front.
There's a,
and, like, how do you balance those two?
When I talk to him, too, I think we had that conversation a little bit because he said at first he felt really weird
yeah.
about selling something because
yes.
everything else he did for free. And he's like, I just don't want people to be upset with me.
Yes.
Like, I don't want the subscribers that watch my videos to be upset that I'm charging them
but
for
I've
this.
Been through so many funnels where I'm trying to get to the paid thing and I just want to buy something.
I want to buy
and
the
just
thing.
I'm so irritated that I can't get there and it's taking
yeah.
so long.
So in the first email, I got the first email the same night. It had two links to free templates and
yeah.
a video tutorial, and he mentioned the product. The second email is the next day. That was the hard pitch. I hadn't even opened the first one at that point. I just had them set to filter to a folder so I would get them and be able to like go
like,
through them.
It's called like a swipe file.
A swipe file.
Swipe file is like the file of like other things people are doing that you think are interesting. That you
oh,
like swipe,
swipe file.
Swipe
I
file.
Like that. Mm. Swiper no swiping.
Swiper no
okay.
swiping. Wait, what is swiper no swiping from?
Dora.
Dora the Explorer.
Yeah, the OG. Oh, and there was the last thing. Discount code for $50 off in that second email hard
yep.
sell. Which was
yep.
like perfect. So I didn't have to open the first email. Because you know how sometimes you can set up triggers where it's like if they don't open the first one, you don't send them another
yep.
one. Like
yep.
they have to keep engaging.
People who are engaged, yeah.
Yes. I hadn't opened either of them and they both came in. So it's like, that's also interesting to me because those are the little tweaks that I think sometimes
yeah.
they seem small, but at the margins, they can really make a big difference.
Make a big difference, yeah.
So I think it's like, the fact that it was just two emails and there was a discount code, I was like, beautiful. It does not surprise me at
yeah.
all that this is working.
I like the ideas and sort of what you were saying about having like product.
Yeah.
There is, I think it's Nathan Barry. He runs ConvertKit.
Oh, yeah.
ConvertKit.
I met him at Ramit Sethi's like launch party,
yeah.
actually. He's super nice.
He has this like article, I think it's a blog post. It's like levels of wealth creation.
Oh.
And essentially like the levels are what kind of product or what kind of offering you should be selling at different levels of the game. So like essentially when you're just starting, when you haven't done anything, like it's haven't done any entrepreneurship, right? And actually just in general, when you're making money, even if you back up, if you have a job, you're making money, you're exchanging like time for money, right? And that's kind of like the first level
yeah.
of like wealth creation. Then the sort of next level is you're doing things like you're creating like a service business.
Okay.
A lot of times
that
people
to me still
jump.
Feels like time for money.
in a way, it is. It's kind of a graduated version because it's not just job. There is a business there and it's service.
Oh, but, I see the distinction.
It's kind of the next level, right? But it is. The next level is like productized service, right?
Yeah.
So instead of just like, I'll do this thing for you, it's like, I have a package where we do 4 of these things every month and it's this price. Or you can have this package where we do 8 of these things this month and it's this price. So time for money, pure service, productized service, and then there's like full product, which is like a software, a Notion template, like a clear like product there.
Okay.
And a lot of times people try to jump from like only doing the first thing to like all the way to the end of like, I'm going to go straight to product. And I think if I think about my own businesses and sort of how they've evolved, so much of like the very first version of the product was a service. So when I launched my course, the first version of that course was like, we're going to meet on Zoom each week and I'm going to live teach the class.
Yeah. Okay, wait. I want to ask you more about this because I think there's something really important in there. So we're going to come back to that right after a quick break. So it's interesting because you're talking about how the first version of it was a service.
Yeah.
I want to dig into that a little bit more because something that I'm not quite clear on is, like, you and I recently were just talking about how, you know, you noticed that there was a need for this product or that for this service, for this business, we'll say.
Yeah.
We won't even be specific about product or service, but you noticed there was a need. And then I felt like in the story you told me, it was just kind of like, and then I put on a workshop and 70 people were there and I was like, wait, hold on. Like, what do you mean? Like, where did that come from? And when you developed this, talk me through the iterations. Like, what was the MVP? And then how did you build on that? And then was it $2,000 to begin with? Like,
I always start businesses as services first, actually.
Interesting.
Not with the intention that they always stay a service. Even when I built, like, for example, my very first app business, the very first iteration of this was like, I built a type form. People answered questions about their taste in art. My first company was an art startup, and so we had an algorithm that matched people to artwork. But when we started, it was like, fill out this type form about what you like. And then I went on LinkedIn and found an art advisor and was like, hey, I'm working on this project. I'll give you, like, from when we sell artwork, I'll give you a commission of the sale. Can you help me find artwork for people? And she manually looked at the results, went on the internet, found artwork for people, put it into a separate type form, and then sent it back to them. And the separate type form had, like, you could rate on a scale of 1 to 10 how much you like the different artwork and get feedback. And so I started that as a service, right? And then gradually it got, like, more tech directed. So, like, the next version after that, you know how surveys have, like, show, hide? Mm-hmm. They have, like if you say, what's your favorite color?
The if-then logic on the back.
So what's your favorite color? The next question is, like, great, why do you like blue? If you said blue, or if great, why do you like red? If you said red, and what it's doing is it's like showing you the blue question and hiding the red question, right?
Conditional logic, right?
So I took that functionality and essentially loaded like a bunch of artwork into this survey. This was like version 2, and so then it gave you instant art recommendations because you said you liked paintings and photography. It showed you the things that matched that and didn't show you the other things. And that was like V2.
And that was, how would you classify that on that scale you just gave us?
The first one's pure service. The second one starts to get into productized service, but and really like you, janky version of the product.
Did and you then we struggle got more sophisticated. With, but it was commission based. Would you make money if they bought the piece?
Yeah, we make money on the sale. Exactly.
I was going to say, because I was like, I feel like that's a value perception thing, too, where if it feels like it's a BuzzFeed quiz or if they don't realize what's happening.
I made my first $35,000 with that quiz. So,
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so
but they're not
people
paying
used
to take
like,
quiz. You only make money if they buy the art.
We had a couple different variations. So, like, I was mad iterating. So there was a version where people paid an amount up front. People, like, typically pay for, like, art advisors. And so I intentionally positioned it as a service. Actually, one of the things I almost always do is, like, I position what I'm doing as a service and compare it to that.
Hmm.
So even when it was an app, all of the language was around, like, get your own art advisor. Right. And same way that is the clothing company? Because people have a high value perception of services and they're like, oh, like technology and software, that should be cheap, even though it takes a bunch of work to build.
Yeah.
So that first version was like, start with service. You can be on the ground with service and like understand like what didn't work for you. What did you like? What did you not like? With Apps Without Code, the very first version of what we made was a service too. I had 5 people. So the first time I did it, people were reading my blog. people were emailing me, and I was like, people keep asking me for help building the app. I've been journaling about like the progressions of all the way from like janky survey to building this app, but still without code. People wanted help with that. So I sent out like an email that I was going to be doing this. I took one-on-one sales calls with people about like, what are you working on? How can I help you? Offering them value.
It's almost like
you
were positioning yourself as like a sort of consultant.
Yeah.
And then
I think most education businesses, it comes from that person like consulting and then going straight into course, or at least the era that I was in. I think now people go straight to course. But it was about like, how do you help people and then turn that knowledge and what you've been doing, what's been working to you, into more of a productized service. But it's much easier to start with like service than productized service.
Break down productized. Someone that's listening to this going, what do you mean productized service?
Even what I do now like has a lot of elements of productized service. So an example of productized service is you have a set price. It's not like we come up with the custom price whenever
you're not charging by the hour.
You're not charging by the hour, or like we just decide it's different for each person. You have packages.
Yeah. Right?
So an example of this is like,
yeah, what
I'm
are your
gonna,
packages?
Oh, so for mine. Okay. So we have two.
Okay.
Now there's been different variations. You want now or you want when I started?
Whichever you think is more interesting.
Okay. When I started, there were three.
Okay, great.
There was actually, no, back up. When I started, there was one.
Yeah.
You're right. I do brush by the first iteration.
Bro, you are,
it feels like
you
it was
are
so
like...
long ago. So the first iteration, there was one price. It was $900. I read a bunch of people's
Holy
blogs.
Holy shit, you started at $900.
I read a bunch of people's blogs about what they were charging. I literally just copied their exact, I remember that Brian Harris funnel? I copied everything pretty much that he did. So I just pulled from what other people were doing. And I was like, okay, let's see. Worst case scenario, I'll pull the price down.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. It's really hard to move the price.
And that's
up.
$900 for the service.
It was like $900. It was a course still, but it was I'm going to like show up live in the Zoom. We're going to talk to it together. There were some, like, I had some one-on-one sessions, I think a few as part of that too. So that was the first version. And pretty much in the first week, my whole plan was to have five people.
Okay.
So like in the first week, I had my five people. And I think whenever you have ease of getting people, you should know your price is too low. It shouldn't be that easy. There should be some friction if you have good pricing. So after I helped those five people launch their apps, we did it again. And I asked a bunch of friends who had audiences, hey, I'm going to do a workshop. Why am I going to do a workshop? Because I read on a blog that somebody else did a workshop, so I'm about to try it. It wasn't like, oh, I'm being strategic. It was like I was funnel hacking. We call it funnel hacking. But
swipe
like,
folder.
I had a swipe folder. I had secret shopped what other people were doing. So I was like, let me try myself doing it. Instead of like just calling each person, let me like try this in a group setting. So I had a bunch of people. I think I had maybe 1,000 people sign up for the webinar.
Holy smokes.
And a good webinar typically has like a 30%
show up
rate.
What drove the traffic? Was that from the blog organically? Was that,
no,
did you start running paid?
Primarily, no, this is pre-ads. I asked friends who had audiences of entrepreneurs, people who wanted to get in entrepreneurship and people who wanted to get into tech, to tell
plug
people
it.
About the workshop, to plug it, put it in like a newsletter or whatever.
And, when you,
and I would give them a percentage of the sale when someone
So, okay, so we're talking workshop though.
Yeah.
So like with, what I'm trying to get at is like what you taught them in the workshop. Was it just like, well, I already wrote this blog post explaining how to do it. So
no.
I'm really just like breaking that down and teaching what I already know how to do. Or was
okay,
it
great.
Like, what do you, what when you had that workshop?
Yeah.
I mean, I know the general workshop webinar model where it's like you teach something kind of surface level or you teach something like one little piece and then you direct to the hard sell. But like the product itself and was it really you just teaching what you already knew how to do because what
the
you
workshop?
Had done? No,
or
actually
the actual
with the class, with the product.
No,
the thing
in
that
the
people
actual
are paying for.
Class, it's like, let's open up the software tool and click by click start building your app.
Got
First,
it.
First, everybody's app probably needs a profile. Let's, by the end of the class, have everybody have profiles completed and published
Did
and
you
launched.
Build out a curriculum for this?
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
you knew like every single, how many classes were total in this?
The first version of the program was 12 weeks.
12 weeks?
12 weeks.
And you were showing up every week?
Yep, I
you
showed
were
up every week,
it.
And then there was homework every week. And pretty much, I probably built, like, the first 4 weeks up front, And so, like, I actually, I sold it before we had even finished because I was like, I'm not going to, like, make this a whole formal thing if no one signs up. It's like, if you don't want it, that's then a I hack. Won't. Yeah.
Built if sold.
In general, I think that's, like, a good approach to do. I think you have to pitch it as a service, not, like,
you know what is cracking me up now sitting here? I'm, like, literally realizing this live is that I think I kind of did the same thing and didn't notice. So this
say
whole
more about that.
Starting as a service, when I pre-Money with Katie, okay, this is like before Money with Katie was twinkle in my eye, I was really into personal finance. And so I had started a little consulting thing that was like for friends and friends of friends where it was like, you pay me 50 or 100 bucks, I'll sit down with you and help you make a budget. I'll help you make a plan to tackle your debt. I'll show you how to open a Roth IRA. Like it was, it wasn't anything that you would need like a license. It was just kind of like,
I'll help.
And let's talk about it and I'll help you set this up.
Some of that conversation because it just occurred to me as so much like, I'll help.
Yeah. So I'm like, let me show you how to do this. And I charged very little for it. But in the process of doing that, and there was actually kind of this intermediary, like the true OGs will remember this. There was kind of a first ditch effort at turning that into something a little more official where I had a couple partners and we had a business called Matriarch Financial where we would like do that, but in a little more of a formal capacity. And so anyway, that was okay. But again, hard to scale because you are on sales calls.
That's right.
You are trying to get people to.
But you iterate on it and the next version of the iteration looks more productized than the
and
full
in
service.
The process of doing that, I had to make spreadsheets that I used as the template and the basis of everybody's budget. And then it wasn't until like Money with Katie was off the ground and up and running and people were kind of emailing me like, hey, didn't there used to be like a spreadsheet? And I was like, wait a second.
And that's how you know, by the way, that you have something really good is people are asking you for it.
Yeah.
And people were like asking me, hey, can you show me how you did that thing? Hey, can you help me? My idea is not like an art startup. It's this, but like,
but it's just kind of funny because I'm like, wow, in retrospect, I see that now. Yeah. And I had not connected those dots that we did the same. I did the same thing. It was like, it started as a service. It started as kind of like a consult, pay for play, like pay for time. And then it was like, wait a second, but there's something, there is a nugget here. I can't, obviously can't make myself available, but it's like, I can put my philosophy into this tool that kind of does it for you. So it's like more DIY.
So one of the things that I'm playing with a lot now and at Apps Without Code we're doing is like taking, how do you take your philosophy about how you do something and turn it even more into like next on that progression product. So I'm spending a lot of time right now. We've built this like AI, you know, I love AI, this AI driven tool that asks you questions about your app idea.
Oh, this is what you've been talking about this.
Yeah, we're using it with students now. So it asks you about your app idea. It outlines all of the pages and exactly what needs to go on each page and creates a mock-up of each of the pages of what that will look like. It's like this really like fun experience of like, oh, that's my app.
Wow.
And then we have a tool in the back end where it takes that outline and it actually builds the app and like you literally like see the computer doing the clicking.
Holy shit. So
we haven't, that second part we haven't like released out to the public, but like now we're thinking even more about how do we productize, and all of it is not just like stuff that you already know. It's like from doing it myself from so many times and then helping other people so many times, there's like a methodology to it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You kind of have the formula, but it's hard to get the formula without actually having done it all. That's where
which is what I'm saying about the service. Like it's hard
to iterations. I think it's hard to go straight to the end.
Straight to the end. Like, and there are so many versions. Like if I look back at like V1 of so many of like the things I've worked on, I'm like, oof, that was not great.
Oh yeah.
So like you iterate on it. And I think so many times people get like caught up in like the first version has to be perfect.
Me.
I can't. You do that?
Me with this show.
No, I don't think you've done that at
I'm
all.
I'm like, the first episode needs to be, they should have want to listen
I
to it every day for the rest
better
of their lives.
As we go. Let it get better. It's like a good work of art that
truly
you can go back and see. It.
Well, iterative.
Progresses. It's iterative.
You know what? Okay, so I think I am happy now that we've gotten, for our product, that we've gotten to the point where I'm very confident in the product itself. I'm like, we're on our fifth official version.
Yeah.
We now kind of have the development process worked out. It's like very easy for, like,
version
I have
5.0.
The right, I have the right partner working on it who's just like a genius. And I'm like, this is great. So I feel good about that. I think where I struggle is that I want to know kind of your approach to Always On, and if you think with the specifically caveat with the price point that's low, right? Yeah. What is the, because I'm thinking, you know, if I'm launching it every year, there's a huge influx at launch. So it's like $49 a pop, or, you know, we might adjust it a little bit this year, but like around 50, we'll say. And there's usually like a few hundred thousand launch weekend. And then like over the course of the next few months, you get, you know, probably another 20 to 50,000 a month for like there's like some afterglow effect.
And when you say always on, you mean like the product's always available. You can go buy it anytime.
Yes, exactly.
It's versus like a launch when it like releases.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's easy when you're hyping something up at a launch to drive a lot of sales away. But then once it's out there and the innate urgency or the innate hype is gone, how do you consistently get that in front of people in an automated way where, and I think the answer is probably something about email and just making sure that we're like getting in front of the right people. But it's a little tough when you're in a bunch of different places. Like we have channels, we are in a lot of different places. So I'm like, how do we then kind of create an ecosystem where the right people are being served that product at the right time? And I think I'm going to probably mimic the Thomas Frank model a little bit.
Interesting. I also don't know that I love the always on model. I love the like in between of launch and always on. I think there's something in between.
Oh, like almost which like quarterly is like, or mini.
I see a lot of people do this with like membership group content.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is like there's a monthly open. Right. Each month it's open. So you got to give if it's open the first week of the month and you find it the third week of the month, you get on the wait list and then it opens the first week of the month. You've got to get in. There's still like a reason to go and move kind of quickly. And then like you close it.
Yeah. I wonder because sometimes I think that if that only works, if the audience you're it kind of. I think you can fatigue people that way.
Yeah, I think it works pretty well for, like, new people. I do think from a funnel perspective, there's just going to be people who are never going to like, buy the planner, and, like, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, I think it is. I think it is email. I think that is the answer. Yeah. It's just figuring that out. But I
but you can do all these things that we're mentioning. Those things can be done all
the interim thing is interesting. And I know that there is a way to pull off always on because I know people that are doing it. So I'm like, maybe there is something there with just the kind of the back end and getting right to it and making sure that the content that's like marketing for like in that sense, I'm referring to the way that like Thomas Frank has these videos where it's like, you know, that the people watching that video are interested in Notion because but the video even is with about the video, Notion.
There's some kind of content event, like the video got posted. There's a new video that's happening. And so there's the experience for a brand new person seeing the funnel where like they're coming into a first thing. And then I think to your point, like you do something with email, like right immediately, just tell them that you have the thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell them that you have the planner. But I think there's also then a separate strategy for people who are already in the audience. And I think if you separate your strategy for people who are new coming in and people who are all like already in the community, I think you need a slightly different plan for each of them.
I agree. I think that I kind of love the idea of doing several launches a year, but I think that there needs to be, I'm almost into the workshop thing. I think that there might be something there because I think some people do want that personal touch, but it doesn't mean that it has to be a one-on-one, obviously.
It doesn't have to be a one-on-one. And also, like, I think sometimes workshops get, like, a bad rep for being, like, not that useful and helpful.
Not that useful and also like, kind of smarmy.
You can do, like real salesy. Useful stuff.
Yes.
On a workshop that like really like I have people email me all the time about the like thousands of dollars they've made just going to my free workshops.
Okay.
Yeah.
Workshop so link totally in the show notes. Good plug. No, it's true though. I think that there's something to that because I personally I think I have an easier time charging for something and not you charge for a workshop, but when I feel confident of the value that the person is going to get from it, I'm like, I don't feel weird about something. This is going to help you. You should have this. Yeah. And that's very much how I feel about the planner.
Yeah.
And I think that same energy could be brought to a workshop. But I do agree. I think that sometimes I hear webinar
You're
saying
the workshop would be free or you would charge?
It would be free, but just that I would feel better about it if I felt like there was a lot of value provided.
You absolutely should do a lot of value provided.
Yeah, but that is going to take some time, I think, to get there.
There is...
I want to get that right. I don't want to waste people's time.
So, do you know ClickFunnels? The business.
Yeah.
So the
refresh my memory. What is their
ClickFunnels is like a landing page builder. It's like a website building software.
Okay.
Right. And their founder has this thing called the perfect webinar formula. It actually like walks you through questions and then it like generates like your slides of like what to say. And I think it leads you to a high value workshop as opposed to just like randomness.
I want people to get something out of it.
Yeah.
Even because if someone comes and is not in a position to buy the planner or doesn't feel like it's right for them, I still want everyone. Yeah. I don't want anyone to feel sold.
I think in your workshop, you should go through the planner, pick some people from the audience. Like, let's actually work through the planner. Let me show you three different versions of how this planner can work and how you can modify it for yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Like, actually give real tactical stuff.
So do you feel any did you ever feel any imposter syndrome about charging thousands of dollars for something?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, say more about
that. Yeah, I think like when I started, I definitely felt that way. I think I charged like, and I think from a comparison, I doubled the price the second time we launched it. And I think I had seen like maybe more of like a more common like $2,000 price point for courses. And I was like, I'm going to move mine down a little bit. Yeah. So I had three different tiers.
Okay.
And there was like a self-paced course, a group coaching course, and a one-on-one course. And I think the one-on-one was definitely underpriced and the group coaching also. And I ended up the self-pace. I ended up removing the self-pace entirely and sort of upping the price for the other two the second launch. But the first time, I underpriced it.
So when you did relaunch.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I actually think that that's okay.
Yeah, I think it's
okay.
I'm still figuring it out.
I think if that gets somebody to actually put it out there.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with because guess what? You just so happened to have underpriced it. But what if that was bullshit?
Yeah,
I mean, like, if it wasn't good, you could have been over. I think you'd rather be under than over.
I think this is why service-based version of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, where I was really actively involved and could, like, oh, let's do a one-on-one and, like, walk through something. That's why I think that works a little bit better when, like, you can insert yourself into it.
Agreed. I think the other thing
that... When it's full product, it's hard to, like, assume that the first version of the product is perfect. It's probably not.
It's definitely not.
Yeah.
Thomas and I talked about that in the interview that I did with him where he was like, the way that I got around feeling weird about the price.
Yeah.
Because I think at first he said that he, even charging $100 and something for a template, he was like, I got around that by offering a money back guarantee. So for any reason, someone could come and be like,
I'm not feeling it.
I'm not into this. And he's like, great, here's your money back.
Yeah.
Like, it's no harm, no foul. So it's like, if you don't feel like you're getting the value that you paid for, okay.
Yep,
so I'm like, that's another good way to kind of like soften it if you're feeling a little bit funky about it. But
I think I felt less stressed about price and more stressed about doing the selling, like sending the email, like the conversation we were having about like sending an email first and like telling them about the product. I felt more stressed about that. And when I would see like people's numbers and people's blog posts about like the number of like outreach that they had to do to hit the numbers, I was like, ooh, like that feels worrisome for me. And I remember actively being like, let's just try it. And I think in general, I have to do with myself a like, close your eyes, try the thing in general with entrepreneurship, is otherwise I'll get so in my head about it. So I definitely remember that.
I think that's a perfect place to end today because I think next time or in a future episode, we need to talk about that hump specifically.
Close your eyes, just do the thing.
Close your eyes, do the thing hump. I also think we need to talk more in depth about customer service because you made a comment about how with Miss Excel, the volume, I was like, well, why couldn't you always just do it with two people? But you're absolutely right. You get so many, we deal with that for the entire 2 months after launch is just constant emails. And I'm like, someone else needs to know how this thing works so that I'm not the one answering. So we're going to come back to that.
Sounds good.
But in the meantime, that's all for this week's episode of Bossy. So thanks for sitting down with us today. And for the YouTube audience, you're welcome for what's happening on Tara's head.
Hair.
Pod fam, you're going to have to.
Blessing you with the vibes. Thanks for hanging with us,
blessed
guys.
Blessed with the vibes. Bye.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.